This is episode 9 of the Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
2% doesn't sound like much. But 2% of the entire planet, of every person on it, that's more than the world's 10 largest cities combined. It's 140 million people. And like that, they were gone.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the show The Leftovers on HBO. We're still here, and so are you. So let's talk about Cairo. Suddenly I'm hidden. It's the darkness of the dawn. And your friends are gone. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name is Blake.
And I love
when I'm right.
I think it happens like once every blue moon. What were you right about this time?
Time out. Look, it may happen once every blue moon, but I'm going to live in my glory over this one. Like three or four of my sudden theories came true
list
in this
them.
Episode.
Tell me. Three or four? That's quite lofty.
Okay. First of all, the thing we talked about, Kevin's shirts. We found out that Kevin's shirts, the guy gave him a total set of shirts that like were not his.
Yeah.
Patty planned the murder of Gladys and fully admitted to it. No problem. Kevin Sr. ain't crazy because Dan the dog killer is talking to people. When he was in that little cabin, he wasn't talking to Patty, like some people are saying, or Kevin. He was talking to those spirits that Kevin Sr. was talking to.
We'll revisit that. Continue. What's your last theory that you got right?
And then the coup de grace, the one that made it all true, made it all great. My one triumphant moment in this entire podcast. Jill is going into the GR. How freaking smart am I? Wasn't that great?
Oh, yes, you are smart.
Thank you for placating me.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I nailed it on that one.
Well, I'm proud of you. Okay. Before we jump into Cairo, can we talk about things that we might have missed in the last episode?
All right. First thing, Kevin's dad in the last episode was saying, hey, wake up, just stay asleep. That's fine. Just go ahead, stay asleep.
Go to sleep, go to sleep, Bethany Frankel.
I was just going to say we've heard that before, yeah, which is true, from Bethany. But guess who was the first person we heard it from?
Who?
Wayne. Wayne was saying the same exact thing in episode 1, right in the pilot. He was telling Tom, everyone here that is just pretending that the departure didn't happen, they're all asleep. It's time for everybody to wake up.
Ooh.
And I wanted to point that out. I don't think anybody has pointed that out yet from some of the columns that I've read about this episode and in the previous episode, the podcast that I listened to. It's an important distinction that everybody just has to wake up. The second thing we missed was Matt's address in...
Let's call him Reverend Matt.
Yeah, Reverend Matt. His address at his house in the last episode, the number was 316. Now, I wanted to point this out because I actually read a fantastic column by Brendan Ambrosino of Vox.com. I always recommend this guy on Twitter, even on this podcast. And bear with me as I read some of his article. He said, every kid who's been to Sunday school can rattle off John 3:16 on command. Well, I can't. I did go to Sunday school. But it's the text says, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. And eventually he goes on to say, the verse refers to one of the foundational beliefs of Christianity, that Jesus' father sent him to earth to redeem it, even though his father knew it would mean death for the would-be Messiah. At the heart of the Christian story is a conflict between father and son, which comes to a head in Jesus' arrest. As Jesus prays in the Garden of Gethsemane for God to help him in his escaping impending murder, he tries desperately to change his father's mind. Ultimately, Jesus submits to his father's will, and because of it, the world is indeed saved, which means the world is ultimately put right with God the Father. The gospel, in a sense, is all about freaking daddy issues. And so was Lost, and so was The Leftovers.
Well, I bet you Reverend Matt, he just picked that house because of that exact number.
I wouldn't put it past him.
Right?
He's like, dude, I love Christ so much.
I love John 3:16. That's like the best verse ever.
I have like tattooed on my body, bro.
He probably does. And that's why he got the house number. We have some other big announcements that we want to share with you. First, The Leftovers has been renewed.
Oh, everyone breathe a deep sigh of relief.
They do not need to wrap this entire show up in two more episodes. They can let it run, baby.
Something tells me they knew that way far in advance. And they just didn't tell anybody. You know, I don't know why they didn't do it. They didn't tell anybody. But
suspense.
Yeah, maybe. It's Lindelof that he loves creating that stuff. And yet the best part about it is we got a job next year.
So is it going to be next summer? Is that when it's going to come out?
Oh, I'd imagine so. This show probably takes a little bit of time to write, number one. And number two, it probably takes a lot of time to film and get it done. They actually have to go to these towns and live in these people's houses.
And find all those white shirts.
Hey, speaking of writing, by the way, I have been teasing on Twitter a very big surprise.
I love surprises.
And the hashtag context is everything, hashtag mind blowing, hashtag the leftovers. And now is the time I get to reveal that surprise.
I hate when people speak in hashtags. Just speak like normal people.
Well, but I had to give context. Okay. Again, context is everything here, kiddo.
Okay.
The big surprise?
Dun, 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 dun.
We have Kath Lingenfelter joining us in an interview next episode. We're going to have a bonus episode of The Living Reminders.
Just because we love you guys so much, and Kath is so awesome.
She is so freaking awesome. I am madly in love with her. She deserves to be a household name. Number one, because she's a super cool lady, but number two, she is an extraordinarily talented writer. And she had agreed to come on to our show. We set it all up through HBO. We actually just had the interview tonight. And we're going to put it out there for you.
And for those of you who Thursday don't necessarily pay attention to who writes what episodes, the episode guest, which was all about Nora and her losing her name and everything like that, Kath wrote that episode, and she's also written the episode of next week. So the second to last episode, the penultimate episode, Kath wrote. So Kath's a really big deal, guys. You're going to love this episode. So stay tuned. It's coming out later this week.
So that's our big surprise. I can't wait to share it with you guys. Like I said, either on Thursday or Friday.
Let's play Figure Out That Title.
Today's title was Cairo. What the heck is Cairo? Okay, is Cairo in Cairo's in Egypt? Right?
Cairo's in Egypt. Yes.
Okay.
I'm gonna let you go with this one. I'm not gonna say anything. You go with it.
So you just went with this whole like biblical reference, all right? Maybe there was some stuff like I know Moses hung out in Egypt. You know, he didn't really want to be there, but he was there. So that's something in Egypt. They mentioned Cairo. Ooh, was that the town? The town in New York that they were in? In that little camp?
Like, yes, it was.
Was it like
good
a Boy
job.
Scout camp?
It was like a little Boy Scout camp that Dean said that Kevin brought him to, gave him the directions. He's like, oh, I was at this camp, and you said you smoked cigarettes with your buddies here. And
oh,
everything.
My gosh. When he's, oh, my God, hood rat stuff. If you guys have not seen this YouTube video, oh, we're going to post it up. It's this little kid who steals his grandma's car, and he's like, I want you to do hood rat things like smoke cigarettes. That's what I figured like Kevin was like in this episode, you know, when he was a little kid. He was doing hood rat stuff in the cabin. So that's why it's called Cairo?
Yeah, and actually Dean pronounced it Cairo, which I think is probably the proper term, like the proper phraseology.
Now, you know what? American revolutionists, you need to stop. When you are copying a legitimate city from the other side of the world that is much older than you, you go with what it's called.
All right, Tama, did you just say American revolutionists?
Who named Cairo Kiro or whatever the heck? Who did that?
Who's?
Like Benjamin Franklin?
Did you just make up the word revolutionists?
What would they be called?
I have no idea what you're referring to.
Like people in America back in the old days that named this place Cairo or Cairo,
okay.
Whatever, so the heck.
Revolutionaries.
It was. Whoever, you know what?
We're running into this SAT thing again.
The people who named this town did it incorrectly.
Okay, look, the literal definition for this episode, yes, was indeed Cairo, and that is a call out, particularly to the town in which this cabin was placed. It also was a call out to one of the
National Geographic.
Yes, thank you. It was welcome. National Geographic and everything. But I also think that there is a lighter, well, a much bigger connection to it. We haven't really said this, but we're participating in the Watchers program with HBO, meaning they sent us a burner phone and they're sending us all these cool texts from Wayne. Like, you know, the phone that Wayne gave Tom in the beginning to contact him with the smiley face on it. We got one of those. And, you know, they give us a whole file on who we are, and they have like a tabulation of all our episodes, and they gave us like this really cool poster. We actually got a lighter, that, like a replica lighter of what Jill gave to Lori, you know, that said, don't forget me. We actually got one of those too. Well, on this burner phone, they sent out these coordinates last week, and we didn't understand what it was at first. And then we just looked it up, and then we realized the coordinates led straight to Cairo, Egypt. And it was really cool. And then we were like, oh, okay, I get it now. And then if you looked at it even further, the coordinates pointed to this bridge. It's called the October Bridge. And remember, in the last episode, they were talking about bridges and who's the bridge. And, oh, my kid is the bridge. Or is Kevin the bridge? Also, another really cool connection there. So why am I saying all of this?
I don't know. I'm starting to get lost.
I know. I'm saying all of this because if you remember when Meg is waiting for Patty to show up in her office and she's watching TV and she turns the TV off when Lori shows up and they start and Meg starts talking to Lori.
Oh, really? Using her voice talking?
Yes.
Naughty Meg.
On the TV, it said that there was a mass grave that had been discovered. And all the people in the mass grave were resurrected.
What?
And like all the people that were in the mass grave, they weren't there anymore. This little news report, I paused, I went back to it, and I watched it.
Resurrected, but, like they found them?
No. Like they went missing. All of these people in this mass grave.
I feel like resurrected means you come back, like Walking Dead style. Maybe you're not a zombie.
No, I think you're right. I'm sorry. That was misleading. What I mean is, all these people, their bodies were missing. And that means
all these dead people.
Yeah, it's kind of like Jesus, how his body was missing in the cave after they opened the door up after 3 days, whatever the hell it was.
But he resurrected.
Yeah, but we don't know if I'm assuming that these people resurrected, right? And it was in a Middle Eastern city that this newscast was taking place.
Was it in Cairo?
I don't know if it was in Cairo, but it's Middle Eastern.
Oh.
And I've been wondering, what's the connection? Is Damon Lindelof really make a connection to Egypt here? Because everything's pointing to the Middle East. These coordinates, this newscast, which was put in not just to like as a filler, but like a real purpose.
This show is so in-depth that people like me who don't have a really good brain at 10 p.m., we just can't keep up.
I know. Well, that's why you got me, and that's why you got this podcast.
Well, I'm glad that I got the first part of the title.
Yeah, I know. So I keep wondering what the deal is. And is he really going to go back and mine that territory? You know, spoiler alert for Lost. Egypt ended up playing a pretty big role at the end of Lost. And is he going to go back to that?
That's where I got lost in Lost as well.
or is this one giant red herring? Am I looking too far into this?
I'll say yes, because it'll be simpler for me to follow along.
The final connection I'm going to sit here and say is when Patty was getting all the clothes ready today in the beginning of this episode, and Kevin is preparing the dinner for Nora, there's a song playing, and it's a spiritual song, and the lines of the song are, I've been burked and I've been scorned, and it's playing as they are doing their tasks together, and the final lyric is, there's trouble all over this world. And I'm sitting here saying, okay, trouble all over this world. We got this newscast. We got the coordinates. Cairo. I wonder if there's a connection there, just beyond the cabin being in Cairo, New York.
I'm going to need it served to me on a silver platter because I am not getting that connection yet.
Well, I'm sorry. I tried.
Smarter than me.
I tried.
It's time to reheat the leftovers.
As you said, Patty is laying out some clothes. and Kevin is laying out the tablecloth. Really great shots. Like every angle was the same. Beautiful lighting. Made mm-hmm. both of them seem really pretty and they were both focused. I liked it a lot. Patty just kept really weirding me out. Like when she put down those two little baby shoes and was just laying out people's clothes. That was freaky. Can we just, like, let's just address that whole thing.
Okay.
What the heck is she doing in that church with all those clothes?
She's preparing the clothes for the loved ones, I think the loved ones that they bought. Remember how Patty gave
all that money.
Lori all the money. And then Lori, the truck shows up with the two guys and he's like, okay, hey, where's the money? And she gets the note and says, show me first.
So those are like the fake doll people.
Yeah. And okay, so why do they have those, right? If you remember when Jill is in Lori's house, I'm sorry, Jill is in Nora's house, they have a missing picture on the stairwell.
Yes.
That's the picture that these people, I think, took. So how do we know loved ones are created?
With pictures. Oh, my
That's
God.
That's why the GR went into everybody's house.
And stole the pictures. Not just to mess with them, but
to screw with them, but to make these loved ones. And they gave it a very specific role in Nora's episode, the guest, when they had the creepy guy, the Devin Sawa guy, Marcus, show up and he's like, oh yeah, we can actually make people out of these pictures. If we get enough pictures, we can make a person, literally. So that's what I think the GR are going to do. I really think they're going to get these pictures. They've made these loved ones, especially like, remember the scene where they're carrying the little teeny tiny package?
Yes, the baby one.
That's a freaking baby that they bought. And they're going to put these people in these clothes. And I guarantee that's what they're going to end up doing in Memorial Day.
Oh my God, I can't even. I'm like getting sick thinking about it. I want to cry even just thinking about that. That is so sad.
Isn't that unbelievable? As I'm watching that piece together, I'm like, what the hell are they buying? Like, what's going to cost all this money? And then I start putting it together with these pictures. And then I start going, holy shit. They are going to get loved ones of all these people. No wonder why the loved ones were introduced to us.
Oh my God, I want to cry. That is disgusting. Patty, kind of glad you're dead, because that is like, oh, I'm like really messed up right now just by
I can see it. Like I'm not kidding, guys. Mary is literally tearing up about this.
Okay, let's change topics. Let's go to the other half of it. Kevin getting dinner ready. He's a good cook.
Apparently he's got the chicken going and everything.
Nice. And he has Nora over to meet Jill and Amy, and Jill gives her the third degree. Third degree is when you're mean, and an interrogation is what she gave her.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
She's like, tell me about this gun situation. And I loved how Nora was like, no, Kevin, I got this. Yes, Jill, I had a gun. I don't feel like I need it anymore. Whoa, okay. Check my bag. Jill does.
I didn't think she was going to at first. Like, you saw that trepidation in her eyes, and then all of a sudden, you just see her open the bag, and Kevin leans back in his chair, and he's like, I can't believe this is happening right now. I can't believe my daughter is actually going through this woman's bag. I've been dating this lady, even though I banged her after four dates. I've been dating this lady for a couple of months, maybe, even at that. And here's my daughter rifling through this lady's bag.
You were never a teenage girl, so you don't understand how pissed off teenage girls can get. I was an asshole to my dad's first girlfriend.
You
after
swore.
My parents. I did, because that's how bad I was. My dad's first girlfriend after my parents got divorced, she was from Tennessee, and she was sweet as pumpkin pie, and I was terrible to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I made terrible faces at her. I swore in front of her, even though she and my dad were very clean-mouthed people. I didn't care. I was terrible to her. So when I saw Jill do this and be like, yeah, I'm going to look through your purse, I got it. When Jill broke into her house with the ping pong boys, I sat there and I said, would I have broken into someone's house? Yep. Yep, I would have then. Mm-hmm. I totally would have if I was that age.
Just to prove a point.
Yeah, and because this woman sleeping with her dad, you know, that just doesn't feel good. Her mom's alive, and she sees her mom, and she has a problem with Nora sleeping with her dad. Even though it's making her dad happy, she still misses and mourns her mom. And she also doesn't understand, like, why is my dad sleeping with some crazy woman who has a gun?
Yeah, we actually have a really great call coming up on one of the voicemails that we got about Jill and why she does what she does.
Let's listen to it.
Well, I'm going to leave that later on. For when we do the listener feedback. So we'll get to that later. But a great phone call is coming up in that. We'll leave him to discuss that, I think.
All right. Let's just stick on Jill for a little bit. Let's riff on Jill.
Okay.
So Jill, of course, is just mad, and Amy and she and the ping pong boys are out smoking pot in the middle of public.
Blowing J's in front of everybody. No problem. Kids running around.
You know, maybe at this point marijuana is legal in New York.
Maybe it's just a representation, again, of how little people care about all that crap anymore.
Yeah.
What the hell's the point of worrying about people blowing J's in a park when
they're teenagers?
When 2% of the world has gone, you know?
So Amy and Jill have it out, man.
Oh, and how about when she asks, did you fuck my dad? And not like, oh, did you sleep with my dad? Did you bang my dad? But it was like anger. It was visceral. It was like almost invasive. Did you fuck my dad?
Telling you, Jill is protective of her dad. She is not okay with any of these little bitties. And you can tell it's been bothering her. She knows that Amy's a little slutty.
Mm-hmm.
Amy says yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that they did it on a pile of guns. Which makes me think, no, you didn't, Amy. If you just said you did it on a pile of guns and I don't believe you. Do you think Amy really slept with him?
Hell no. I put this to bed a long time ago. We made a big deal out of this last podcast. There is no chance that she slept with Kevin's dad. Character issues aside, practicality aside, let's just talk about this. Amy gives this answer like she's actually kind of pissed off that Jill would even say that.
Yeah, but Kevin blacks out.
Yeah, okay.
Kevin becomes Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, and we don't know what happens. And half the time, Amy's like, hey, remember last night? Or, hey, it's good to see you from last night.
Well, that's Amy because that's Amy being Amy. She is trying to tempt Kevin.
But who knows what he did during these blackout times?
That's true. Nobody does. And not even Kevin knows. But what I can tell you is it looked like Amy was a little jerked off that Jill would suggest that she banged Kevin. And that answer was very sarcastic. Like, yeah, Jill, I fucked him. He was so hard and it felt so good. And You keep saying that we're not going to be okay. And your dad was saying, oh, I know this is wrong, but I don't care. I'm going to stop pretending like everything's okay. Yeah, and I fucked him. I fucked him on a pile of guns. Ugh. Like, it was just like really sarcastic, right? And because of that type of answer, I feel like it didn't happen. It didn't happen. She was saying it just to be mean, just to stick it to Jill. Like, okay, you want to be a bitch to me? Fine, I'll be a bitch to you. And we all know women, every woman has a bitch in them. And you know that.
Yep, I even say that.
Yep, that's where I learned that saying from.
It's true. So Jill ends up convincing ping pong boys to break into Nora's house. She finds the gun.
Hold on, I'm sorry.
What?
This is why we call them ping pong boys. When Jill asks, hey, did you fuck my dad? And one of the ping pong boy goes, Hey, let's play some ping pong. And I was like, oh my God, you guys are such nerds.
I love them. I really do. They are the little sunshine characters. So they break into Nora's house. Mm-hmm. You see that missing picture. The one thing that I didn't get, I don't think that was the picture that the GR stole because the frame
didn't it come
was...
off. Yeah, didn't it come off the fridge or something? They left the frame.
Well, the frame, yeah, they would have left the frame blank. I bet you that big picture mm-hmm. was her wedding photo.
Oh, okay.
Because that was like a really good size and you didn't see a picture of just she and her husband. It was all like family photos.
Very
salient thought.
I bet
you she took down her wedding photo because she's pissed off that he cheated on her.
Okay, you know what? You are 100% right. From what I remember now, the photo that they took in that episode was on the fridge mm-hmm. and they left the frame there.
Yeah, that's how they rolled.
Okay, yes. And because that represented like the white, the blankness, the clean slate.
The nothing.
And they left it there for them.
Yeah.
Okay, you're right. You're 100% right. I'm sorry.
I was nervous when Jill was going into Nora's son's bedroom and she picks up the bunny and she opens the curtains because all that kept playing in my mind was Misery. And when he accidentally Ooh. Bumps and that little penguin, he like puts it back the wrong way and Kathy Bates is like, you moved the penguin. I knew you got out. Like I was nervous Nora was going to come home and be like, the shades are open and the bunny's been moved because mm-hmm. the bunny stays in that corner. But instead, you know, Jill didn't care. She just left the gun on the bed. I thought Jill was going to at least gonna try to put it away.
Well, yeah, but
if
you noticed, Nora has started to clean up that room. She started to box everything up. And you saw like the big bins of stuff. put in his room, like that she it, that was a representation of her moving on.
Oh.
So, but you are right, though, in that things were changed. Nora knows every ounce of that room. She knows everything about it. Mm-hmm. Even if she knows what she had done to change it, she knows exactly what was in there. And Jill goes in there. And can you get any more heavy-handed in your allegories or your whatever it is that it is, putting a gun in the box of the game Trouble underneath your kid's bed?
I kind of loved it.
No, like it was great. I mean, it was very to the point. It was direct. It
like
was heavy-handed.
The new Nora, the happy like Wayne drugged up Nora.
Yep.
She had a laugh. Yeah. She laughed. She was like trouble, 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 trouble.
Oh, Ray LaMontagne. I love that.
That's
song.
What she's probably singing that and being like, I'm gonna put my gun in the trouble box because that sounds good. So Jill's story of this episode wraps up with her walking into the guilty remnant and her exchanging some pretty serious, deep conversation eyes.
Yeah. What do you think about that? By the way, honestly, what do you think about Jill going into the GR? Is she going there to join it? Or is she going there to confront her mother?
Well, you know, she let go of the dog, who I thought she was going to stab for a quick second.
Oh, that was close, right?
Yeah. I think Jill is battling just so much stuff. I mean, you've seen her like just use and abuse a bit of her body. She's using all these drugs. She's now just lost her best friend. She just doesn't care. And that's what I feel like most people think the guilty remnant is. We just don't care about things. We need to get rid of everything we care about. Mm-hmm. And I think that Jill is so depressed that she just wants to go. And hey, mom's there too. Even better.
And she's even losing her dad in a sense too, because here he is going off with Nora.
Yeah.
And the woman that she has looked up to her entire life, her mother, is in the GR. She lost her mom. And now she's got this other woman coming in and replacing her mom.
That's all she has hope for.
Yeah.
And I would even wager if Lori wasn't even in this picture, Jill would still be going to the GR right now. That she is that lost.
Oh, I don't know. I think the fact that her mother is in the GR is...
Like if her mom disappeared.
It's pretty alluring, I think,
Oh, she
to
loves
Jill.
Her mom. Yeah, and after giving her that lighter and everything, I mean, she loves her mom. How sad was Lori?
See, now this begs the question. Number one, is Lori happy? Number two, is Lori sad? Number three, what does Lori do now? Because the GR, they don't believe in family. They don't believe in relationships.
Nope.
Lori's got a daughter now in this. Okay, and now, all that aside, the daughter thing aside, if Lori is either happy or sad, she has a problem because she is not supposed to feel, as we found out from Patty in the episode after Gladys.
I'll tell you what, though. Lori's feeling something. Lori's feeling pretty darn cool sitting in Patty's chair.
Oh, I think she likes it.
She likes being in that power. She's like, everyone's looking at me. I don't know where Patty is, but Patty kind of sucks. So I'm the new Patty.
And I'm telling everybody that the Memorial Day is still on, that whole thing. Oh, by the way, that binder that Patty had, it had MD.
Yeah.
Do you think that's for Memorial Day?
Oh, I thought it was something like master documents. That's what I made up. Master documents.
I thought it was Memorial Day because, you know, you're flipping through
everybody,
and they have the... Oh, the reason why I think it was for Memorial Day is because the picture that Patty had for Nora...
And her family.
Was the family photo that they stole.
You might be onto something.
So I got a feeling that they're going to represent all the people that they stole, and that thing is for Memorial Day.
Maybe they should have put MDMD, so it was Master Documents for Memorial Day. We'll have to talk to Kath to like get that idea.
I know.
So I know we've jumped around a bit. I think Lori definitely has some mixed feelings about Jill joining the GR. We'll talk about that maybe even next episode, because we have a lot of stuff we need to talk about.
All right, let's go.
Holy smokes, Kevin, please wake up. Like, really, please wake up, because I can't take this blacking out stuff. I've only blacked out once in my life, ladies and gentlemen, and it is when Blake paid a bartender at a wedding. He gave him $100 and he said, don't let my wife go thirsty. And I was drinking mojitos all night. I don't remember things, but there were pictures of me smoking cigars, and I've never smoked anything in my entire life. Bad news. So Kevin obviously has a drinking problem. I do not, but we haven't been seeing Kevin drink recently. Like, ever since he's realized that
he's
losing his mind. Yeah, he's given it up. So he, of course, still blacks out, and bald guy Dean his good old buddy is there with them. And
he taps on the window, right? And he's like, hey, you taking a nap? What's up with you?
I love how he wakes up all the time in his car. Like, how does he get from falling asleep in bed to now being in his car, sleep driving, totally not legal?
Well, I think he's probably functional as he blacks out. He just literally doesn't remember it.
They wake up and they're in Cairo.
By the way, I love this part too, because it made you feel like this was another dream sequence. Mm-hmm. And then you realize, holy shit, this is not a dream sequence, when they show that Kevin is actually not in his house, mm-hmm. that he's gone. Mm-hmm. And who shows up in the cabin?
Patty's.
Whoa, Patty?
Patty tied to a chair.
No, she ain't tied. She duct taped.
What is up with people in duct tape? You know what? Whoever was the props master must have gotten a lot of duct tape.
He had a deal with 3M.
Yeah. Like, I'm just going to use duct tape. They duct taped Patty better to that chair than they duct taped Gladys to the tree.
Oh, I know.
There was more tape on Patty than there was on Gladys. What the heck?
Dude, Patty is dangerous. I don't care what. She may not be in the best shape of all time, but that girl, she's got some
crazy,
viciousness.
Crazy people are really strong.
We figured that out last episode. Crazy people. You saw Kevin's dad. Oh my God.
So come to find out, when Kevin magically blacked out or whatever, he and Dean had a really good time, probably killing dogs or something again. And they passed by Patty. They threw her in the truck, drove all the way.
And they gave her a beating, by the way.
They drove because Kevin gave directions and said, I know where we can go. There's this little cabin I used to go hang out in as a little boy. And they taped Patty to a chair. They're gonna kill her.
And by the way, this isn't like the one time that Kevin has gone to this place. You've seen it. There's like a little fire pit with shoes and all of Kevin's shirts everywhere.
Oh, you thought Kevin has been there before?
Oh, he's been there. I guarantee you he's been there a number of times.
Oh, I thought that was
during his blackouts.
Oh, I took it totally differently.
Okay.
I took it as some like crazy people are doing some like seance stuff, or if there's like aliens or whatever these spirits are. Whoever is in charge of Dean the bald guy, whoever's talking to Kevin's dad, all these people that we can't see, I thought they did that to mess with Kevin. I didn't take it as Kevin was having like nighttime naked seances with his shirts and his shoes off.
Well, first of all, I never said that he was having naked nighttime seances, but that, you know, that's not picturing. Why let details get in the way? I don't know.
I'm picturing that scene. What was that Sandra Bullock movie, The Engagement?
What?
What was that movie where she would like got fake engaged to Ryan Reynolds?
Oh, The Proposal.
The Proposal. Yeah. And she's like doing a weird seance
with the grandma.
Oh, who was it? Betty
White.
Yeah, she's doing a seance with Betty White. That's what I picture Kevin doing around that little fireplace.
She's talking to the Indian spirits and stuff.
Oh, you know what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about,
so
actually.
Kevin, I don't know. I cannot sit here and say Kevin took his own shirts in the middle of the night, would head on up to Cairo, leave his boots there, leave his shirts hanging on these trees, nailed to the trees.
Yeah, nailed to the trees, by the way.
Anger.
Hey, how about when he punched the tree, like multiple times, like it was a punching bag?
Yeah.
I feel like you would do a little bit more damage to your hands than what he actually did. And that would hurt like a mother.
Yeah, it definitely did. It definitely did. So Patty's there hanging out in that chair and she's like, what up, man? You know what? I win. This is exactly
what you wanted.
This is like chess and it is checkmate. You are either going to kill me and I'm going to be the next martyr, the next Gladys, or you're going to let me go and I'm going to go tell on you and tell everyone that you beat me up, abducted me, and I'm going to ruin your life.
Mm-hmm.
How do you like me now?
She is Ben Linus.
She really is.
Yeah. Like, oh, was. That woman, I'm convinced, had this planned. I'm convinced that she kept poking at Kevin. She kept sticking him. And she probably knew that he was going around doing stupid things. He was getting himself involved in things that he probably shouldn't have. And she was just waiting. She was biding her time. And she knew, just like Gladys knew, that she had to die. And that she was... it was time to move on. And I'm gonna save that for my sudden theory of the week.
You know, she's been going after some high profile people. They messed with the reverend, you know, someone that you look to for spiritual guidance. Now they're gonna mess with the chief of police who you look to for safety. And I feel like maybe this season, if not this season, next, the GR is gonna have their eyes on the mayor. I think they're going towards the key people who the people look up to in Mapleton.
Oh, okay.
To shake their bones, to rattle them something fierce. They've gotten to their religious leader. Now they're getting to the chief of police. So Kevin freaks out. He's like, oh my God, I don't want to kill Patty.
It was frantic. Like, yeah. you see him like wake up and you're like, he's like, holy shit. Like, what have I gotten myself into here? Like, what have I done?
You picture Sarah Michelle Gellar coming by and I Know What You Did Last Summer, music playing. Pretty Prince Jr. being like, hey.
How many random movie references can we make in this podcast?
Listen, when you're in a creepy place in the woods and people are like about to get killed, there's just too many things. Way too many things going on. My goodness. I still have to find my Harry Potter one too at some point. But so Dean is like, bro, this is what we came here to do. Don't flake out on
me. Yeah, you're the one with the idea.
And I loved how he told him, he's like, go to the car and take a nap because I want the other Kevin to come back.
Oh, God, that
so
was great.
So he knows. Dean knows that Kevin is a two-person. Like a two. There's two different sides of Kevin. And he knows when Kevin goes to sleep, evil Kevin comes
out. Well, this is what I'm thinking, okay? I'm thinking I've come around on Dean. I've come around on him thinking that most of the time he's probably real. But there are some times that he ain't.
Well, what about what he said to Patty? Because Patty's like, I looked and Patty said, I know stuff about everybody. I know where people are from. I know people's backgrounds.
That's my job. That's what we do.
I can't find anything about you, though, Dean. I can't find a license about you. I can't find anything. And doesn't he say, like, I'm a guardian angel?
Yeah, she says, for all I know,
you're a ghost.
You're a ghost. And he doesn't say no.
Yeah.
He doesn't say, Patty, what the hell's up? Like, of course I'm real. Look at me. I'm here. You're talking to me.
Which you would expect Dean to say, because Dean's like a dude. You know, he always has like that stuff on his lip.
Oh, he's always packing a lipper.
You
like,
could just picture
a massive
him to be like,
lipper.
I'm not a ghost. I'm just going to spit on you now so you can feel me. You're right. He doesn't say I'm not a ghost.
He says, I'm a guardian angel.
And then she says, oh, I heard a little bell.
Yeah, a little bell, like meaning that an angel just got his wings.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm coming. I don't know. They are screwing with us as viewers, whether or not this guy is real.
He is real, but what is the definition of real? Is he a living, breathing human who was born on Earth in this time frame, or is he someone who's been sent from somewhere else?
Well, something tells me this isn't very original. I'm sure everybody else has made this analogy, and I'm going to make it here because it's pertinent. We've got a Tyler Durden situation going on here.
I don't know what that means.
Really?
Tyler Durden?
Tyler Durden. You don't know who Tyler Durden is?
No.
Oh, my God. Another fantastic movie, Fight Club.
Oh, okay.
That's the Brad Pitt character, Tyler Durden.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know his name. I hate people's names in movies. Just say Brad Pitt in Fight Club.
Oh, okay, fine. So, you know, Edward Norton. He spoiler alert, by the way. I think it's beyond 10 years, by the way, that I can say this now. Edward Norton. His character, he really is Tyler Durden.
It's like his alter ego.
But he really is him. That's his real name. But he forgets that. And he creates Brad Pitt in his mind to do the things, to be the things that the Edward Norton character never could be.
There was a fight club at my college once.
Was it really?
I was an RA for most of college. I'm like a goody two-shoe in case you guys haven't figured that out yet. And I was doing a rounds, and for some reason on like a Saturday night, I figured I'd do like a 3 a.m. round. And I came to our common room and there was literally Fight Club going on.
Well, the first rule about Fight Club is that you don't talk about Fight Club.
I know. And I walked in on it, and I remember actually I like crawled under a table to like sneak my way in because I was really concerned. And I then woke it up. I got like liquid courage from air, I guess. And I had to break it up. And I was like, what are you guys doing? And they were like, this is Fight Club. And then it never happened again. And I had to tell other RAs. I'm like, they must have moved to another dorm.
Yeah, you think?
Fight Club, man. Wow. You don't mess with that.
Well, what I'm saying is Dean goes to Kevin and says, go take a nap. I need the other guy. And I really, honest to God, think that Kevin is either making up Dean or Dean is something that Kevin is projecting. I'm not sure how to describe it. But Dean definitely is not like real as in terms of human real, but he's something.
So we saw the Book of Mormon recently.
Yes, we did.
Which, you know, in different biblical books or, you know, religious books, angels come down and they look like people.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk to you and they hang out. Like an angel came down to Mary and was like, hey, you're going to have a baby. Congrats. You're not going to get a baby shower because people are going to be pissed that you're a virgin. Sorry.
How do you explain that one?
get a sleep sack. Good luck. but you know, like Book of Mormon, that angel came down and like chatted with all these people and everything. So, but it made me think like, and this guy says, I'm a guardian angel. Like maybe there is some super duper sci-fi world that he's come from. Of course, I like to do my canon that he's an alien. I mean, I saw Men in Black. I saw those aliens, how they're in people's suits. But I don't think he's from here, but I do think he's real. I'm going back. I used to think he was Kevin, but I think he's real. I just don't feel like he is from here.
I think it's a hybrid. I really do. I think he's not from here, but Kevin is also seeing him in specific manners. Like anytime he's with this guy, he's always doing something that's a little screwed up. He's either killing dogs or he's got Patty locked up in the cabin.
He's doing hood rat stuff.
He's doing hood rat, smoking butts in the cabin, you know? Like he's got stuff going on. But whatever. You know what? Let's just...
So after everything, he and Dean go back and forth. Dean's like, whatever, man, you're not cool. Kevin goes off and has his little seance in the woods with his white shirts and comes back to find out that Dean decided to suffocate Patty anyway.
Oh, but before we do that, Kevin tried to call Nora. Didn't try to call Jill. Didn't try to call anyone in the police department. Didn't try to call... tried to call Nora. And what does that say about their relationship?
That he loves her.
That he actually loves her. I really, truly believe that he loves her.
Yeah.
And it's soon to say that. But
in his moment of serious fear and weakness, that's who he turns to. Think about it. He doesn't have a brother. His dad is crazy. Mm-hmm. The mayor makes fun of him half of the time. This is the only person who honestly gives him the time of day.
Yep.
So in any way, shape, or form, whether you want to call it love in the lust way or love in the relationship way, he feels like he can trust Nora. And that is who he turns to.
Well, they're
so
honest with each other in that relationship. Another thing, too, I noticed is that when they had their conversation, when Kevin was leaving the message, it was like all broken up.
Yeah. He was in bad service land.
If you remember when the radio turned on and what could have been his dream sequence in the previous episode, and when it said Cairo.
Yep.
In the radio, it had that same kind of effect. It had that same kind of like squelchiness about it.
Whoever the effects person for Leftovers just used the same sound effect.
Probably, but I'm thinking that there's a connection there, obviously.
Okay, I'll go with that.
You know, I think that there is another connection to the title of Cairo.
All right.
That they're referring to this stuff.
Well, Kevin comes back from his little seance with Sandra Bullock and...
And Betty White.
And he finds Dean stuck plastic over Patty's head. And Patty looks like a fish out of water. She's like, oh, oh, oh. Like, Patty, stop it. Stop being so dramatic. Stop being dramatic. If you want to be a martyr, just die in peace. But Patty does not. She's giving Kevin these eyes. And she's like, look at my mouth. No bear's coming in. Like, way too long of a shot on Patty. But he and Dean have quite a tumble. They break some windows and stuff. And Dean ends up, you know, leaving because Kevin's like pissed off and Kevin wins a fight and he rips the bag open so Patty can breathe.
Oh, and as he's got Kevin down on the ground, he's sitting there saying, let her go. It's okay. Just give it time. Let her go. And then Kevin gives him the elbow and knocks him off. And Dean says, man, I tried to help you. And then he turns around and he says, oh, shut the fuck up. I tried.
What?
He does.
Who? Wait.
Dean says this to...
Dean says it to who?
We don't know.
I totally skipped that part. So Dean's talking to crazy people too in his head?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Who is Zane on this show? Ping Pong Boys.
The Ping Pong Boys. That's it.
That's it.
And what I'm trying to say is, I tried to help. And if you remember, Kevin's father was telling him...
Yeah.
They're going to send somebody to help you.
Oh my gosh.
And you better keep it to yourself.
So some people thought that was Nora, but this might be Dean.
I thought it was Nora. Originally, I thought it was Dean, but then I thought that was too on the nose. But I'm thinking that it really is Dean who they sent. And that, to me, leads you to believe that he might not be of this world. Like, literally. If he's talking to these voices that Kevin Sr. is hearing...
He's not from this world. Will Smith's going to roll up pretty soon. To the little Men in Black dance.
Here comes the Men in Black.
So there's Patty gasping for air, and she and Kevin have this really deep talk that, to be honest, was a little too deep for me. Patty was like quoting stuff, and Kevin's just looking at her with this glazed look, and he's like, girl, I'm not listening to you. And she says, you know, I killed Gladys.
Yeah, well, she was a... He asks her, did you murder Gladys?
Oh, no. Yeah, and why? Because you remember her name.
Yeah. She. No one will forget her now. Right?
Right.
And she did exactly what she needed to do. And Patty ends up saying she was okay with it.
But it was funny because she wanted her to be remembered, and yet the guilty remnant were instructed to take down the pictures of Gladys.
Now, so what they were taking them down, if you remember, to paint them with the don't save them.
Oh, yeah.
And they went and they had that protest.
Oh, man.
Right? And also, and now as I'm thinking about this, remember how Patty was telling Lori that doubt is a fire in which you'll burn?
Yes.
And you'll burn you right to ash?
Yes.
Gladys had that doubt at the very end. Remember when she says, don't stop,
when she talked, yeah.
please? And when she was saying, don't stop, please, it made me feel like she didn't know that she was dying. Or that she was supposed to die.
I thought it was just your natural instinct. Just like people who try to drown themselves, probably at the last moment, they like try to breathe in air. I think if you are dying, you are going to try to survive.
Yeah, no, I agree. She said that she was okay with it. Patty said that Gladys was okay with it, that she was committed.
But autopilot takes over.
At that point, probably yes. But that means she probably wasn't very fully dedicated. That means that Patty was probably there, probably heard those words. And I bet Lori was also there because she had those visions of Patty dying. Remember?
I think Lori was there.
I think Lori might have been there. Because if you remember, when she sees the body,
yes,
she had those quick cuts of seeing Gladys get pelted in the face.
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
Okay.
I think Lori's a little too weak. I don't think she could have handled that.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah. I think she was pretty messed up after finding the dead body.
In the end, I also really feel like Damon Lindelof is speaking to the audience through Patty.
Well, Damon, I didn't understand a goddamn word that
she said. Some things that were kind of easy.
No.
She said, no, let me finish. She said, it doesn't matter what happened to the departed. It doesn't matter where they went.
Okay, I got that part.
Doesn't matter what happened to them. What it matters is that I accepted that they were gone. And she ends up following it up with, answers don't matter.
And she also says, love doesn't matter. All these different things don't matter. You need to get rid
of
it.
Yes, what happened to them doesn't matter. She just accepted it. And I feel like Lindelof is trying to tell the viewers, guys, chill out. It doesn't matter what happened to the departed. It really doesn't. What matters is that it happened. What do we do from here? Where do we go from here?
But then she also said something about the end's coming soon.
Yes, and it's coming soon for Lori.
I hated that part.
And it's coming very soon, she says.
She
ends up telling Kevin, you all are ready. All you need is a little push. And it reminded me of the Joker in The Dark Knight at the end. And he's hanging upside down when Batman has him. And he was saying,
I took Gotham's White Knight and I brought him down to our level. It wasn't hard. See, madness, as you know, is like gravity. All it takes is a little push.
It was that dive down into madness that I think Patty is referring to when she says, all you need is a little push to accept this.
What is the end that she's talking about? Like, what is coming so soon? Does she think that wherever the departed people went, the sudden departure people went, that they're going to come back? Or is she referring to the end as Lori's going to die or shit's going to hit the fan when all these fake dead people are laid out?
Well, I'm going to leave that to my sudden theory of the week. But I am going to say that I think Patty and the GR as a whole believe that there's going to be another event coming. And it's going to happen. And we're all just waiting for it. And in the meantime, screw it. We're going to live the life that we're going to do it. We're going to strip everything. We're going to stop wearing clothes that have color to them. We're going to stop talking because it's pointless. There's no need for talking. And we're going to strip everything down so that we are erased. We're just sitting here waiting for God's judgment. And that's like their MO now. Like that's their call to arms.
What was Patty saying? She had like a really good monologue and I didn't understand a word of it.
Yes, she was actually quoting a poem by William Butler Yeats.
Oh, okay.
And it was entitled, "He Bids His Beloved Be at Peace." And the words were, "O vanity of sleep, hope, dream, endless desire, the horses of disaster plunge in the heavy clay. Beloved, let your eyes half close and your heart beat over my heart and your hair fall over my breast. Drowning love's lonely hour in deep twilight of rest and hiding their tossing manes and their tumultuous feet."
I understand it just as much as I did when Patty said it. What the heck? No, why did she decide to have like 10th grade English class inside Cairo's cabin?
Because she's begging Kevin to understand. She's begging Kevin to understand what's happening to her and what's happening to him.
What does that poem mean?
It means there's a guy, right? And he is letting go of
a dead person.
He's letting go of that he's letting that person go
because they're breaking up, or is she dead?
Dying.
Oh my God. It's yes. A poem about someone dying laying on top of you.
Yeah, and it, well, not dying laying on top, that's a little literal.
Well, that's what he says, like, "My breast, your hair's on me." What? That sounds gross.
Yeah, it's just like what I'm saying is he's caressing her and the person is dying and they're like halfway there. They're not, if you listen to it, "Beloved, let your eyes half close and your heart beat." So you're still not dead yet, but you're like halfway there. You're in the middle.
Okay, so instead of picturing them like laying on top of each other, I'm going to picture someone laying in a hospital bed and you're holding their hand and you're saying, "It's okay, you can let go."
Yeah, and, okay. And that is what I think Patty wants Kevin to understand. That right now, they're like in this in-between place.
Like a person who is so sick, who's going to die, who is fighting too hard, and they're fighting just to be in pain.
Yeah, and I think it's Kevin letting go of that pain. And I also think it's a result of everybody trying to forget the departure happened. They're trying to move on. They can't, and the GR won't let these people move on. They won't let it. And because they're trying to forget, they're in this mode of like unfeelingness. Like there's no point to it all.
Oh man, this is so heavy.
I know, right? I know.
God. He like gets a knife and you think, is he going to kill her? And he's like, "No, girl, I'm going to go and tell everyone what I did because it's not worth it." And he cuts off all that duct tape. Then she grabs that big piece of glass and shoves it in her throat. And it's so disgusting. I had to cover my eyes. And Blake was laughing at me because I kept saying, "Oh my God, that's so gross. That's so gross." And they just stayed on her for so long with her like liquid blood all over the place.
I thought that was a beautiful scene. I really did. I
kind of want to throw up.
This was I know I've said this now like a bunch of times, but this was my favorite scene in the whole show.
The bloody scene?
The scene between Kevin and Patty, including the bloody scene, by the way.
Including the poem that I didn't understand.
Yeah. Yes.
I think that was my least favorite scene. I know that it was like the heaviest and the most monumental, but I didn't understand the poem. And that was, girl, for you to shove that big of a piece of glass in your own throat. Oh, and then she talked shoving it in her throat. How did you miss your vocal cords?
Yeah, apparently she did. I don't know.
She is Patty, and she's like, "I know precision. Like, I'm going to make sure Kevin hears me at the very end."
And like he goes over to her and he runs over to her. And before she shoves that thing in her throat, he says, "Patty, I don't understand you, and I'm not going to understand you." Now, is that him just refusing to accept his own calling still?
No, he probably didn't understand the goddamn poem like me.
Yeah, you're probably right. He gave her like a dumbfounded look.
Yes. I was giving the TV the same look, saying, "What the heck? This girl's crazy." Goodness.
So this whole episode, it was about Patty. It was about her. It was about the GR, kind of.
Yeah.
Their MO and all the things that they do. And it was about Patty's role in what she completes for the GR.
And understanding what the GR really stands for. I thought we were going to learn that more through Meg.
Yes.
And you're right, we learned it more now through Patty.
And I'm happy that that happened, because this episode, in addition to that, was all about acceptance. It was about acceptance. They've been trying to put this in the whole time of for Kevin. Like, Kevin Sr. is telling him, you have to accept the National Geographic magazine from me. You have to accept the fact that we're in the game now and that we're playing a big freaking role in this.
Got to get your head in the game.
And then Patty is saying, I have to accept that the departure happened. And so do you. And Kevin keeps pushing all of these people away. He keeps pushing. He's not listening. He's not paying attention. He actually, I heard this on a podcast, and I forget who it was, and I'm sorry if I'm not giving you credit, but you know who you are. He reminds me and this other podcast a lot about Jack from Lost. If you remember Jack in Lost, he would hear things, and if he didn't like them, he'd freak out, and he'd push everybody away and say, no, this is what we're doing, this is how it's going to be, and it gets him in trouble, and he loses his faith. And I wonder if this is what's happening to Kevin. Jack had a lot of daddy issues, and so does Kevin. He can't identify with anything. And if he keeps pushing these people away, he's going to run into trouble.
Trouble. You know who got in trouble?
Who?
Meg. You know what, Meg? You failed. Like, you need to be kicked out of the Guilty Remnant because you were screaming at Matt because he was telling her stuff about her mom, and she was fighting Matt. She was being very violent, had his blood all over her. And she comes in back into the house, and she flips out, and she's like yelling at everyone.
Yes.
And then she doesn't shut her mouth for the whole episode.
She just keeps talking.
She asks Meg if she's okay. So she goes to go see Matt to apologize, because Lori tries to teach her a lesson. She's like, you need to man up, girlfriend.
Prove to me that you're not weak.
Yeah. So she goes and apologizes to Matt, writes a little note, I'm sorry. And while they're there, Nora's there taking care of Matt's wife.
Yep.
And Nora is a
she's
tough cookie.
Feisty, dude.
She is. Don't mess with Nora. Nora gives Lori that little shout out, like, hey, you might want to go check on your daughter.
I had dinner with her. And I was like, ooh, bitch face. All right.
You just went there. You just went there. And then, of course, Meg asked Lori at the end, you know, are you doing okay? Are you sure you're right? It's okay if you're not all right. And I loved it. Lori just smacks her in the face.
Oh, I know. And the other thing, too, is she smacks her in the face when she brings up Memorial Day. She can't stop talking. And she knows about this plot that they're trying to do for Memorial Day. And she just gets the shit kicked out of by Lori. And Lori's like, shh. She keeps telling her to shh. And she gets this rise out of Lori. And she gets this rise out of these things. It makes me wonder if Meg is really trying to break Lori. Like, if she's trying to get this rise out of her just so she can talk too. Because she has like this little smile afterwards, this little smirk.
I noticed
Did you
that.
Catch that?
Yes.
And like, okay, why are you smirking?
I think she was smirking because as much as Meg wants to be in the Guilty Remnant, as much as Meg wants to not feel, she knows that it's not possible. That it is honestly not possible to become this void of emotion. And I think that's why, I know that she and Lori are like buddies, you know, they're partners in crime. Maybe they're set up together for all of their little assignments. But I think she realizes that Lori is in pain as well.
Yep.
And that Lori isn't 100% drinking the Kool-Aid. Even though Lori shoves it in her face and smacks her and keeps telling her she has to write down her words, I think that Meg is still trying to find herself, and she doesn't fully believe in the Guilty Remnant, and she doesn't think Lori does either.
I agree with you 100%.
However, Lori got to stand it up this week. When Patty wasn't showing up, as we said, everyone was looking to her for guidance. She got to go sit in the big girl chair. She's now planning whatever's happening on Memorial Day. Here's my question, though. If Patty is dead, did Patty leave like a secret binder of like, if I die, here are the rules. Here's how you get the money. Whoever gets to sit in my chair, does this mean Lori can talk now? Because Patty, since she was the boss, she got to talk whenever she wanted.
Well, she didn't talk. She just talked to test Lori, and then she talked.
But she talked like when Meg joined. Like, is Lori the new Patty? Like, when someone walks in the door, does Lori get to talk to Jill, for example?
Oh, yeah, probably.
And get to say, this is the last time I'm going to speak to you.
Yep.
This is what we do. This is how we roll.
Yep.
You know, does Lori get to do that? But more importantly, who is giving the GR money? How is Lori going to get in contact with the bosses?
Okay, the GR are getting money because anytime someone joins the GR, they have to give up all their possessions to the GR. Whether it's
like sell them on eBay?
No, they don't. They get the rights to it. Like the real estate, they get the real estate. If they have money in the bank, they get the money in the bank. They got a car, they get the car. They get the house, they get the house.
I don't think they would let me in because I just have a lot of student debt. I don't even own my car.
They'd be
car.
Like, you know, girl, we don't need you. We're all set. We don't want to offset our profits.
I don't think the GR would accept me for real.
Probably not.
Darn it.
You know, I also, our girl Caitlin, who tweets into us a lot, by the way, she has a real hate for Lori. And she has a real hate for Meg. And I was kind of not on board with this until I saw Meg freak out on Matt this episode. Yes, okay, your mother died on October 13th, the day before the departure. I get it. Your grief was hijacked. You could not grieve for your mother because the rest of the world disappeared. It was hijacked. I get it. But you've gone now and you've started complaining to Matt about the fact that he is writing all this stuff and he's giving all this information out about you to everybody else. Hello, what the hell do you think the GR are doing to everybody? They're gathering all this information.
Yep.
They're stalking them. And you know what Meg was saying to Matt the whole time? You guys are everywhere. Mm-hmm. Stop stalking me. Yada, yada, yada. Those are the same exact words she said to Lori in the pilot before she joined the GR. I mean, verbatim. What? How can you complain about this now?
Because Meg doesn't know what she's doing.
I feel like it's...
Meg came for the pancakes, and now she's having the gruel. And she did not have special outfit today. She did have capris.
Yeah, she did, which was great.
She got to show a little skin.
Well, she's Liv Tyler. She can show.
That's it.
That's part of the contract.
Yeah.
She doesn't do white.
You know once again, Lori's hair looked great.
Oh, yes. And so did Meg's. You cannot ugly up Liv Tyler. I know we said that last podcast. You can't do it.
No, it's impossible.
And I'm always having a hard time uglying up Amy Brenneman too.
Yeah.
Like the hair's looking good. She looks good. I don't know.
I did love that kind of jumpsuit outfit though. Tough cookie. All right. I think we pretty much wrapped up this.
Wait. One last thing. This episode was full of answers. Full. And this was, and I want to give a giant F you to all you Leftovers haters out there who are like, oh, this show doesn't have any answers. Lindelof isn't going to answer anything. This is like the exact antithesis of what they were saying.
Do you think they're going to answer some of the other big questions still within the season?
Oh, definitely.
Do you think they're going to answer the dog thing?
No, I don't think that there's going to be a necessary.
How about Dean?
Ooh, yes, I think Dean's going to get answered. I do.
I hope so.
I do.
Because if he turns out to be an alien, I'm going to be so proud of myself.
Well, let's talk about some of the things we learned.
Okay.
We got the information on the National Geographic cover. We figured out the kind of connection to the cover somewhat.
Which I wouldn't have gotten unless
but
it
we
was
did.
For you.
Okay. But we did. Gladys, we figured out who murdered her.
Yep.
Kevin's missing shirts, found them.
Kind of. Who put them there?
Doesn't matter. I think it was Kevin because clearly he's been there back and forth. The relationship between Amy and Kevin. Yes, it was a little uncomfortable. She did say that she banged him, but we all know, in my opinion, that she didn't bang him. And then we figured out the guilty remnant, what they're about.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And then we found out that Kevin cheated on Lori, and Lori knew it because yes. She ended up telling Patty.
His dirty dick.
And he thinks that Lori joined the GR because he failed her. And she's like, that's not the case at all. She wanted a purpose. It's not because of your dirty dick. Who are you? You're nothing. She didn't have a purpose. You couldn't give her that purpose. So we found out now that Lori did in fact know that Kevin cheated. And it also alluded to the fact that Lori and Patty had a relationship prior to them being in the GR.
And it made it still more seem like Lori was her therapist.
Yes.
She said, I used to talk to her and then she talked to me.
She told me everything and I told her everything and now she tells me everything.
Oof.
So man. A lot of answers in this episode. And bravo to the writers and to Damon Lindelof for starting to wrap this season up in such a tight bow. I am very pleased with where they're going. This was my favorite episode so far. They knocked it out of the park. It was fantastic.
I agree. It was awesome.
I feel bad for the show in a sense because they're losing Ann Dowd, who plays Patty. That woman is stunning in her acting. Half the time, she wasn't even talking. All she did was just give eye squints and facial expressions.
Stink eyes.
She gave stank eye, right? But what she did when she did speak, it was breathtaking. And she owned every scene. And they're going to have a hard time replacing that kind of gravitas.
Villain.
Yeah. And I'm not even sure if she's the villain.
The villain, yeah. But definitely an antagonist.
Well, like are the GR the bad guys?
I think that as a viewer, you are meant to side most. Like you care a lot about Kevin. You're like Team Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
And the GR is keeping his wife from him. And they're causing a lot of terrible things to go on in his town. So I think that the GR is the antagonist right now.
Yeah, but like, are they really bad guys though?
I'm not saying that they're bad guys. That's why I'm changing the word villain. I think that they are the antagonist because we are meant to feel like we are Team Kevin.
I keep thinking of Patty as Ben Linus.
Yeah.
And all I can think of is Ben Linus in season 3 when he's like, we're the good guys, Michael. You remember that?
No. I mean, yes, I do. But it's okay.
I feel like that's what's happening.
We just can't keep like referring to Lost all the time because not everybody watches Lost.
I know, but I feel like a lot of people who watch this show were Lost fans.
All right. I feel like we recapped very, very well.
I think so, too. Want to move on to listener feedback?
Yeah, let's do it. Jason Scott tweeted, I really hope Ann Dowd wins a supporting drama series actress Emmy next year for The Leftovers. She is equally amazing in Silence and Speech. I could not agree more, Jason. I feel like we need to start a hashtag to somehow get this across to hopefully get Ann Dowd nominated.
All right, why don't we get to the voicemails?
Mary and Blake, this is Brian, a.k.a. BDF331. Today's voicemail is about Jill and the Trouble Gun from Episode 8, also known as Michelle McLaren's episode. Now, I know some people don't like Jill and put her in that annoying teenage son-daughter category that has plagued TV dramas lately. And while there wasn't a person on the planet who despised Dana Brody more than me, I actually like Jill, relatively speaking. I like the actress Margaret Qualley, who everyone now knows as Annie McDowell's daughter. So the question that struck me the most about this episode was, why was she crying after seeing the Trouble Gun in Nora's house? Maybe this was obvious to some people, but here's my take on it, as it was very understated yet understandable for why Jill did what she did later in the episode. Since the show started, Jill has been in utter despair, mainly because of her mother's abandonment for the GR. Throughout the show, Jill seems to be holding out hope for something good to happen, like the split second where she walked into the house to see her mother again, only she was there to divorce Kevin. So when Nora comes to dinner and she seems like a completely different person from the gun-toting Nora that Jill saw earlier in the season at the coffee shop, Jill questions this newfound security by asking about the gun. Nora explains that it made her feel better at the time, but now she doesn't need it anymore. Jill then clarifies her question by saying that she just wants to know how or why she got better. So what does this mean so far? It's a beacon of hope for Jill. She finally has a new maternal figure in her life whom her father adores, only Nora also seems to have found happiness and purpose again, something Jill desperately yearns for. Obviously not fully convinced, Jill goes to Nora's house to see if Nora has really gotten rid of the gun or not. Upon finding the trouble box, she opens it, she sees the gun, and she starts crying. She realizes that Nora can't be better if she still has the gun. Thus, her own hopes and dreams of having a better life are again shattered. She walks out of the house. The twins ask, "What about the gun?" She replies, "Doesn't matter." And what is Jill really saying here? She's saying that life doesn't matter. And thus, she goes to join her mother in the guilty remnant. Anyways, great episode by the incomparable Michelle McLaren. Mary and Blake, keep doing what you're doing. Thank you so much, guys.
Brian, thank you for the phone call. That was absolutely great analysis about Jill and why she was doing what she was doing with Nora and everything about the gun, and her mom loved every second of it. And thank you for pointing out the fact that this was directed by Michelle McLaren. Now, if you don't know Michelle McLaren's name, you should. She has directed so many spectacular episodes of television, most notably, obviously, The Leftovers, Game of Thrones. She's worked on The Walking Dead. She was one of the main directors for Breaking Bad, especially for that fantastic episode, Tahaj Ali. And, oh my God, you know how great Breaking Bad was. She's directed Things on the River, Hell's on Wheels, The Event, as a matter of fact. X-Files, it just goes on and on and on. And she is an absolute talent.
It's time for the Tweet of the Week. Today's Tweet of the Week comes from Mattman version 2.0. He says, "Man, whew, I need a hug after that episode. Where's Wayne?"
Question mark. That was great. God.
Seriously, Mattman version 2.0, I'm right there with you. I really am messed up after this episode. I'm like sad. I want to cry. I was confused. I don't know if I'd hug Wayne in that brown underwear. It's a little dirty.
It's kind of gross. All right, look, guys. We actually talked so long on this episode.
Because it was that amazing.
It was really good. There was a lot to cover. Like, I thought there was a lot to cover last episode. But for the sake of making this episode 2 hours long, which we don't want to do, what we're going to do is we're going to take all of the listener feedback and actually combine that with our interview with Kathleen and Felter. So we have two separate episodes for this week, and we're not abandoning you. I know
No, you're actually getting an extra dose of us.
Yeah.
So it's actually even better. So if you sent us some tweets and you're like, "Oh, I sent a really good one," it's probably going to get read. Just tune in on Friday, because you're going to get an awesome, epic interview with Kath.
And then all the listener feedback. Yes. And I promise you, we got some good stuff today. But there's even better stuff in the emails that we got and in the voicemails that we literally got so many voicemails, I don't even know what to do with them.
It's just, we want to talk about them because you guys are so on point with a lot of these things, and we just need to share it. So
I know. So I'm so sorry, guys. We gotta do two episodes.
Blake, what is your sudden theory of the week?
You saw at the beginning of the episode where Patty was talking to Lori, and they had that same kind of conversation, like the voiceless conversation that Patty had with Gladys.
Oh, no.
And there was like a kind of nod there and everything.
Yep.
Okay. Then she holds up the sign that says, "Ready?" question mark. And Lori says, "Yep, okay." It makes me wonder if Patty knew that she was going to die, that it was all part of her plan.
Like, if she used herself as bait walking on that road at that time of night.
Yeah. And like, what are you doing there? What are you doing there by yourself? What's going on here? It makes me wonder if Lori knew that she was going to take the leadership role in advance. And that's why she was so quick and easy to just sit there behind that table and like show up, right? And then we also have Patty saying that the end is coming near for Lori. So it's natural to think that Lori is going to die.
Who's Lori going to leave in charge?
Well, you see, now this is the thing. This is the thing. My theory of the week is that it's not going to be Lori who dies. I know I said that in the beginning, like in one of the beginning podcasts. Yeah. It's not going to be Lori who
dies.
You changed your mind. I'm changing my mind. It's going to be Meg. Meg dies. Meg is going to die because she has to pay for her transgression in talking and beating up Matt and doing all of these things.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Now, if Patty were still alive, I would say that Lori would die. But I think Meg is going to die and Jill is going to become the number two.
But also probably because they can't afford to hire Liv Tyler for season two.
Well, I mean, that's character, like that's that's casting analyzation, and I think that's probably practical analyzation. Yeah, that's true. But I mean, at least in terms of the story itself,
Meg might die.
Meg's gonna die because she has to pay. Something has to happen with her. I don't know what it is. Something in this Memorial Day expose that they're putting on.
You don't think a slap in the face is enough?
No. And it's not necessarily that Lori is putting her to death. But something tells me that there is this idea of sacrifice going on in the GR. Gladys sacrificed herself. So did Patty. And I think Lori probably ends up thinking that she's going to sacrifice herself. But before she does, Meg is going to die. And Lori realizes, shit, I got to be around here to make this all work. And it's not a coincidence that Jill just shows up in the GR as all this shit's going down. It makes me wonder if that's the case. So that's my son theory of the week. What do you got?
I think dogs are going to come back with a vengeance.
Okay.
All right. I mean, I didn't understand half of the stuff that Patty said this episode, so I know I don't have a great son theory of the week. But Jill letting go of that dog, and now it's free again. I don't know. These dogs just freak me out. They always have something to do with Kevin going crazy, and Kevin's going to go bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
In this next episode.
Do you think he's going to lose? Like straight out visions?
Yeah.
Like visions in real life, like not even sleeping?
Yeah. I think it's going to be daytime stuff. Daytime blackouts.
Yeah, and he's just going to...
He's going to lose it.
Oh, I bet you it's not even going to be blackouts. I believe it's just going to be, holy shit, it's like going to be like that guy in...
It's going to be like when Rick in Walking Dead becomes bad Rick for a while, and he's like, he's just tapped because he's so mad that his wife is dead.
Oh, and he sees his wife?
Yeah.
And he hears the phone ringing?
Yeah. I think that...
Spoiler alert.
I think Kevin's gonna lose his mind a little bit.
I think so, too. And he's gonna start seeing things and interacting with things that aren't there. Kind of like A Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe when he's interacting with the figments of his imagination.
Yep. This is going down. Okay. And it might be happening.
All right. What do you want to close out this show?
You got it.
All right. Let's do it.
We love hearing from you guys. You want to head on over to our website. It's thelivingreminders.com. That's where you can reach us and you can leave some voicemail. Now, if you're going to leave some voicemail, make sure you say your name, where you're from, and try to keep your voicemail.
A minute and a half.
Yeah, minute-ish. It would be great. Just because, you know, we want to make sure that everyone can be heard. So head on over to our website. Once again, thelivingreminders.com.
Get us on Facebook at facebook.com/livingreminders.
And you can always tweet. We love Twitter. Our handle is Living Reminders.
The email machine is always great too. So you can get us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
And head on over to iTunes. Subscribe if you are not a subscriber. And if you are on iTunes, head on over and give us a rating and leave us a review. Write us a little review, even if it's a sentence or two, and let us know what you think. It really goes a long way, and it helps spread the leftovers lovin'. Thank you so much. Now look out for our interview with Kath Lingenfelter. That's going to be later this week. I'm thinking it's going to be up on Friday. So make sure that you are subscribed. Maybe Thursday. I mean, if we're like really...
I think we should probably try to aim for Thursday.
We'll aim for Thursday. And if we get a little lucky, you know, a little behind, it'll be on Friday. But it will be on. So make sure you hit that subscribe button on iTunes so it'll automatically be downloaded to your device.
You can also get us at the Living Reminders hotline by calling 503-454-6730.
Also, if you want to get some more of Blake and I, we have two other podcasts we want to just quickly pitch. Parent Cast, if your friend has a baby or is pregnant or wants to just hear about our adventures in parenting, our podcast is called Parent Cast. And we have another podcast about a television series called Outlander. It's on Stars. It's fantasy fiction, actually very happy, so very different feel than Leftovers. It's called Outlander, and our podcast is called Outlander Cast. Thank you all so much for tuning in. This is episode 9 of The Living Reminders. And don't forget, we have a super special episode 10 coming up just later this week. I'm Mary.
My name is Blake.
And we'll talk to you guys later this week.
Thanks.